Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, it's Tuesday, the 10th of March. I'm Jules Breach, he's Andy Brassel, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. Coming up with the news that Manchester United have frozen their season ticket prices once again, we assess whether United should be given credit for this initiative, and we're also going to be comparing two big signings who have had very different starts to their Premier League life in Tanguy Ndombele and Bruno Fernandes. So, Andy, let's get straight to it, because yesterday we heard the news that Manchester United season ticket prices have been frozen for the season coming. And this will be the ninth successive time that the club has kept their prices static in general admission areas of the stadium. And they also propose to make a few changes to Old Trafford as well. There's going to be an expansion of the Stretford end to continue to enhance the atmosphere at Old Trafford. There's also the potential introduction of a rail seating trial. Now, that is really interesting. We're going to definitely touch on that as well. Yeah. There's also going to be a bit of movement around the stadium for the family section into the Sir Alex Ferguson stand and some other things as well. So the question we're asking really is, should United be given credit for this, Andy?
Well, because we spend a lot of time, well, not necessarily us, but certainly a lot of match-going Manchester United fans spend a lot of time
criticising the Glazers. Some people have put it forward as a counterpoint. Maybe the fans are being treated all right. Maybe the Glazers aren't that bad after all. I mean, I think there are two strands to this. I think, firstly, you have to look back to the main issues that Manchester United fans have had since the Glazers were involved in the club and fully took over in 2005, which has mainly been due to debt. A lot of debt was taken on to fund the actual purchase of the club in the first place, as people know. And that debt and hefty interest payments have remained in place for the last 15 years or so. The sort of debt that Manchester United hadn't had, what, since the 30s, I think. So that is a big deal. And a huge perception of the Glazers is that they've been basically leeching off the worldwide popularity of the club. Now, we did have the financial results of Manchester United last come out in September last year, and they boasted the biggest income barrier in Premier League history at £600 million. But there are a few catches to that. Firstly, the raise in revenue almost entirely relates to the rise in broadcasting revenue. So it's not particularly anything that they've done in that time. Also, the fact that net debt has come down, it doesn't include various bits of interest and charges. And that net debt still is over £200 million, by the way. That's something that the Manchester United never had pre-Glazers. How does this affect the team and the Manchester United fan experience? Well, I think there are a couple of sides to this. Obviously, Manchester United are still extremely financially powerful. They still manage to buy players. But I think under the Glazers, the football direction of the club has led them to the point where they are on the pitch. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And partly the fact that the finances don't take care of themselves, that there's had to be refinancing, debt restructuring and all that sort of stuff going along the way, means that I think commercial imperatives seem to have trumped on-pitch concerns. And it's felt, I think, for a long time for those fans that the club have cared less and less about what actually happens on the pitch, and they've just been a series of sticking plasters on the playing side, and in some cases very expensive sticking plasters to the sporting side of the operation. The other thing we have to say is we have to look below the surface a little bit. Of course, the actual price of season tickets has been frozen, but that's the base price of season tickets. Now, what some non-Manchester United fans may be unaware of is the fact that there has been an obligation to buy cup tickets in conjunction with your season ticket as a season ticket holder for a number of years now.
I didn't know that.
Now, that still exists. That's something that still exists. We've checked the season ticket terms and conditions for this season for Manchester United to make sure that's the case.
So regardless if you're available to go to those cup matches, automatically you get charged a cup ticket price if you've got a season ticket.
Yeah, you give them your credit card number at the start of the season and they automatically take it off. They don't have to send you a notification that has been the case. So there is an opt-out available for EFL Cup and for Europa League. It always says, if applicable. Well, it's very much been applicable to Manchester United, unfortunately for them, over the last couple of seasons. But it's made quite clear that there are penalties for that. Mm. And those penalties include missing the opportunity to get tickets for those bigger matches, which, you know, is one of the big draws for being a season ticket holder at the end of the season. So the price that you get put forward in the brochure is not actually the final price of what the season ticket is. And of course, there's nothing to stop them putting ticket prices for the cup games up. And presumably they will be doing that if they go back into the Champions League. Although, of course, there will be a lot of fans who wouldn't want to miss those games anyway. But, you know, you have at some clubs within admittedly quite a high season ticket price, you get group games included, or other stuff like that. That is not the case. Or early rounds of cup competitions included. That is not the case with Manchester United. You're charged extra.
That's really interesting. I never knew that up until we were discussing this to talk about today on Football Ramble. So that's really fascinating. But the fact that the prices have stayed the same, obviously we know that season ticket prices are extremely high anyway. And whether or not as a fan you can afford that, whether you've got the time and to dedicate to actually going to matches every single weekend is another thing. It is expensive.
Yes.
But the fact that they've kept the price as it is that something we should be applauding?
I don't think it's a bad thing. And United in their statement were very, very keen to say that they offer cheap tickets for under 16s, cheaper tickets for 18 to 25 year olds. And that is undoubtedly a good thing. And but it's a business no-brainer as well, because you've got to encourage the next generation of fans. I think Manchester United are in a position, like every other club in the country, and we've talked about it again and again on the show and again on other shows, I think, on Football Ramble Daily. The fact is, the club need those fans. Now, that's something that I think we've seen more and more at the moment, actually, with efforts to contain the outbreak of coronavirus. You know, you were talking about your boyfriend, weren't you, working on Juventus Inter at the weekend, and he was saying to you how weird it is. Like seeing an empty stadium is not just the fact that
hearing the players as well.
Yeah,
you're not used to hearing the players on the pitch and hearing what they say to each other, and then when they celebrate a goal, what, like, they just sort of
go on, Dave.
Yeah, well done. And then they celebrate with each other. It just seems a bit strange, doesn't it? It's not quite right.
It brings it home how much power fans actually have if they think about it. How important they are, not just in the stadium itself, but to the television spectacle.
Mm.
It looks rubbish. It looks rubbish on television with no fans there. And that's absolutely the case. And I think the Premier League is at this kind of pivotal point at the moment for me, because if you speak to players from overseas, what makes them come to the Premier League? Well, of course, they're paid extremely well. You know, there's no getting around that. That's a huge part of it. And the opportunity to make yourself for life if you come for 3, 4, 5 years. But a lot of them will also say it's about the thrill, the excitement of it, the fact that the fans are so close, the fact that the noise is something spectacular, the fact that when you make a tackle, all the fans go crazy, especially if you're a defender. That's a massive big deal. But I think that Premier League atmospheres over the last couple of years have not been what they were. And you hear, why do I say that? Because players say it. Players who come from abroad, like newer players who've come from abroad, have been like, yeah, it wasn't what I was expecting. I was expecting a little bit more. And this is why Manchester United need to keep, it's a major reason why they need to keep the season ticket prices down, because you need those fans that come in. Now, of course, it's a great thing when people from all over the world want to come and join in and be part of the Premier League. I'm of no mind to deny people that experience, and it's a great thing, and it's a great experience for them if they can afford it, and it's good for the club if they come and enjoy the games and spend money. The people who generate the atmosphere will be the locals, will be the season ticket holders, will be the people who are there all the time.
Every week, yeah.
And that is an enormous part of any football. It's an enormous part of the Premier League in particular, I think. And it's something in the Premier League that, as some of the stadiums have become more and more touristy and the secondary ticket market has grown and grown, that's something that's being diluted and it needs to be not lost. It's hugely, hugely important. And, you know, you look at the atmosphere at some of the biggest stadiums. You look at Chelsea, Arsenal, it can be pretty tame. And I think a lot of these measures that Manchester United are bringing in conjunction with the freezing the season ticket prices are designed specifically to combat that.
You can tell that from the quotes from Richard Arnold, who's the group managing director at Manchester United. He talks about the importance of enhancing the match day atmosphere. That's part of the reason why they obviously want to extend the Stretford end at Old Trafford and making, I think it's around about 2,000 more seats in the Stretford end, which would be incredible.
Well, it's already enormous, isn't it?
Yes, huge. But the other thing that I think is really interesting is this proposal from Manchester United, they've submitted to the local authorities to trial a rail seating area within the stadium. And Richard Arnold, as I mentioned a moment ago, he's the group managing director. This is his quote. He said, "Our belief is that the introduction of rail seating will enhance spectator safety in areas of the stadium where, as with other clubs, we have seen examples of persistent standing. And we hope to have news on this application soon." Now, obviously, it's in these particular areas, like you say, Andy, where you've got the people that are there every single week watching their team. They are diehard supporters and they quite often stand for majority of the game.
Yeah.
This is a measure that United are obviously putting forward, a proposal to try and make this a bit safer for everyone in that area. Do you think this is something that we can see happening at Old Trafford and in the Premier League more?
I think it's not only something that we can see happening, it's something that we should see happening more and more. I think it does have an impact on terms of atmosphere and in terms of the supporter experience, which are very important things. But for me, what's even more important is safety. Now, I think we have to be really sensitive about this subject, and the discussion around this subject has to be really sensitive because of what happened at Hillsborough.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to take the feelings of people who were involved in that directly and indirectly into account, because it's still a huge thing for those families, and it's still a huge thing for English football. And the fact that that the families and people involved with Liverpool are still searching for justice all these years on is absolutely appalling, and it's a stain on English football and it's a stain on English society. There's no doubt about that. But from not just my personal experiences, but I think other fans' personal experiences, we're not talking about just bringing back old terracing. Rail seating is different. It's about allocated places. It's about extra space. And I think...
Explain how the rail seating works, Andy, because I've never been in a stadium that has this.
Well, it's basically you've got a bar across and a seat that clips down from it. So, for example, when we were talking about Borussia Dortmund before, they have to replace their terrace, their big terrace, the yellow wall, the Sud Tribuna, for UEFA games, because it has to be all-seater for UEFA games. And this would be the easiest way of affecting that if it was a newer stadium, in that basically for that you just click down your seat. So it's essentially the same space as a seat. In fact, more space than a lot of seats, because after stadiums had to become all-seater because of the Taylor Report, and that's something that happened in other stadiums in Europe as well, The seats are basically plonked on old terracing, so you don't really get that much space. I mean, I remember when Selhurst Park became all seater when I was a teenager, almost as tall as I am now. I found it really uncomfortable.
You're a tall man.
Not quite tall. Not massive.
Everyone's tall to me. I'm 5'2".
But okay, I've got a foot on you. But it's really uncomfortable, and every time the guy in front of me rocked back in excitement, it just smashed me right in the middle of the knees. It's super uncomfortable.
I've never had that problem.
when there's a goal celebration, people go everywhere. You know, I've been in situations at away games where people have ended up five rows ahead of where they were. It takes longer to get in and out of the stadium. In an evacuation situation, I think it's something that has never been properly addressed in a lot of cases. So it's different with newer stadiums. Like, say, take the Emirates, for example. There's more space. It's more comfortable. Obviously, people of like my parents' age would say too comfortable for a football stadium. But in fact, in safety terms, it's a lot better. It's a lot closer to what we want it to be, because it was built in a post-Taylor Report world. Persistent standing, I understand why it happens, but it's a massive headache for the club. It's uncomfortable for a lot of fans, the ones who don't want to stand, the ones who do stand, because really they're standing because it's uncomfortable. They want to be part of it. They want to create an old school atmosphere. What you've got with safe standing, you've got the space to stand, but without the overcrowding and safety issues. And that is absolutely massive, because there's no back of a fag packet calculations. There's one place, one person. And that makes an absolutely massive difference. So I think not just in terms of atmosphere, but in terms of safety, comfort, it's a winner. I think it can work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We need more from some players, more responsibility, more attitudes, more intensity. And in the second half, we had that. The changes that we made, the players, they gave us a lot more. And obviously, the confidence of the team comes high, and we managed to be very dominant in the second half.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. You can always get in contact with us, of course, at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, julesandandy@footballrambledaily.com. The email remains popular.
It
and
does.
It's a lovely, familiar way to be in touch, isn't it?
Yeah, loads of you have been in touch this week.
Be our pen pals.
We will read some of them out a little bit later.
We shall.
We are teasing you with it for now.
We shall.
Don't skip to the end of the podcast and for the emails.
Don't. You'd miss a really good bit and you'd
exactly.
Regret it. You'd regret it. Let's talk about midfielders because there was a lot of talk at the weekend about two in particular who kind of have a bit in common because they cost similar prices. They've gone to clubs with similar aims. Tanguy Ndombele and Bruno Fernandes, because... They've had very different fortunes at the moment. Tanguy Ndombele was rather hung out to dry by Jose Mourinho. That's not really the aspect that we're going to look at the most closely. But whereas Bruno Fernandes is absolutely bloody flying.
He is, isn't he?
And he played a major part.
It's the only way to put it.
It is. And he played a major part in United doing City over at the weekend. He's enjoying showboating a little bit on social media.
Mm-hmm.
He's loving his life, basically. And it's funny because I think if you looked at it without knowing what had happened yet, if you were told the situations that they were put into and asked how it would work out, I think you would have Ndombele as the favourite to be more influential more quickly, because Ndombele signs at start of July, gets a full pre-season.
Mm-hmm.
comes into a Spurs side that's relatively stable. Of course, Pochettino's still there then.
Oh, heartbreaks.
Sorry, I just got to compose myself a second. whereas Bruno Fernandes is someone who Manchester United have been interested in for a long time, but there was a sense of need. We need him now. Because when you get a signing in January, it's never a truly planned signing. It's at least in part a reactive signing, reactive to
how the season started.
Yeah, exactly. And he's had to come in, change leagues mid-season. And yet, if you were to see them playing their two games in isolation for Spurs and Manchester United over the weekend, you would have thought the roles were reversed, right?
Absolutely. It's quite interesting, really, when you compare the two, because, as you said, both midfielders, both going to big clubs in the Premier League, both with high expectations because of their transfer fees, but with very different outcomes, and very different outcomes from the weekend as well. Obviously, Ndombele involved in a draw with Burnley at the weekend and hooked off at half time, which never looks good. And then Bruno Fernandes involved in the first goal for United, and also and obviously them winning the derby. So
what have you made of Fernandes so far?
I think he's been brilliant. Like you say, there's no other way of putting it other than he's been absolutely flying. He's been bloody excellent since he's turned up there. And I think it's on all different in different areas as well, in ways that I didn't expect him to be good, because when you looked at the stats, the assists and the goals that he can provide from midfield and that creativity, that's something that obviously we were expecting, and well, Manchester United fans were hoping that they could get out of him. But it's what he's brought to the rest of the team as well that I've found even more impressive. The fact that Martial seems happier. All the players around him seem to be clicking into gear with him in the team now. And it just kind of, it's like everything has gelled since he's turned up. And that's not something I was expecting from him at all.
That they flow like they didn't before United, don't they? And I think midfield was always their area of weakness this season. But I think that's it, isn't it? Because he's someone, it's not just the numbers, and it's not just even his footballing qualities. It's something about him. Like, he's a guy who's was totally ready to make this move at 25. And he's turned up and he's like, well, look, I'm used to being the best player in the team. And I am playing like I'm used to being the best player in this team. I'm going to be the best player in this team here, just like I was in Portugal. It's the same vibe.
And he has
you get.
Been in his five games.
He has, absolutely.
It's been five Premier League games, I think.
Yeah. And like you say, that thing about truly exceptional players making the players around them better, it's just his whole attitude, really, the gusto with which he's attacked the challenge. You know, there's nothing shy about him, is there?
Yeah, absolutely. And
about the way he plays, anyway.
Yeah. And it's his creativity. That's exactly what Manchester United have been missing. With Pogba's injury and the wait for him to return, they now have found someone that's been able to kind of replace Pogba's creativity in the midfield. And that's so important. But also, it's that person that just makes everything click around them. And there's nothing nicer as a football fan than watching your team look happy playing on the football pitch as well. And they just seem a lot happier. On the other hand, at Tottenham, it's quite the reverse at the moment. I know they have a lot of injuries and they've got injuries to their star key players. But the way it's gone so far for Ndombele, I know he's had fitness issues and he wasn't great at the weekend. He didn't play well against Burnley.
Never judge anyone on Burnley away. Never.
But he wasn't the only one. It's not like he stood out like a sore thumb because he was terrible. None of the team played that well.
Is there a certain imperative at Tottenham, though, because they're less used to spending money of the dimensions of Manchester United, that there's a sense that, right, you have to deliver. We can't afford for you not to deliver. Look, here's this stadium. It's amazing. Make it happen for us. Is there a part of that, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And there must also be an element of frustration because Ndombele signed when Maurizio Pochettino was the manager. So now he's a few months into his career at Tottenham and a new manager comes in who is clearly very different in his management style to Maurizio Pochettino.
Yes.
And now he's having to deal with that on a personal level as well, because no one likes to see their players be hung out to dry. And obviously this is Mourinho's style and he can choose to manage however he likes to. But I think there's an element of when when a manager calls a player out and is quite negative about their performance, as fans, as media looking on, we kind of, it makes us wince a little bit.
It's quite old school, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels a bit outdated. And I wonder whether maybe that approach is becoming outdated now because we don't really see it.
Well, there's so much of Mourinho's approach that he needs to prove is not outdated in the next little while. And I suppose when you're off to Leipzig later, aren't you?
I am.
You today. Mm. This is huge, I think, for Jose Mourinho. I think for them to go there and get tactically outwitted again by Julian Nagelsmann, someone who's younger, who's fresher. I mean, that's stuff that Mourinho was coming out with after the first leg about all the injuries they've got. I mean, come on. Look at Leipzig's defence. It's unbelievable that he had, well, it's not unbelievable, but that he had the nerve to say that stuff. You have to, if it was anyone other than Mourinho, you'd be knocked sideways but by him having that cheek.
Yeah.
But we've seen it before with Mourinho, haven't we? You have. I do think when we go back specifically to Ndombele, obviously he could do with a huge game out of him this evening, which Ndombele is more than capable of doing. But he must make, he does pick his targets, doesn't he? It's not like he hangs every player who has a bad game out to dry.
No.
I wonder if it's compliment in a way, if he thinks I can get more out of you, so I'm going to use a bit of stick, and maybe there's another time for the carrot, which is not now. I mean, we'll only know if this is successful really off the back of this game tonight and off the back of subsequent games. I mean, it's hard on Ndombele because he's still settling. He's been the beneficiary of some tough love in the past when it wasn't really working out for him, and he rebuilt everything at Amiens and then settled really, really quickly in top flight football with Lyon. But I think the environment at Lyon is so different. I mean, in a sense, there are a lot of similar pressures to Tottenham in that they're a club that's slightly below the absolute elite, in the fact that they, certainly when Ndombele arrived, were still relatively new in their fantastic new stadium and the expectations that brings. But in terms of the squad makeup, it's very different because Lyon is a lot of young players, and I think it's easier to establish yourself as a leader when you're a young guy, when that's the case. But there's a definite hierarchy at Tottenham. And I think you look at the fact that Mourinho does like to lean on those older players. You look how hard he's leaned on Toby Alderweireld since he's been in, who was a player who looked as if he was out the door already under Pochettino, didn't he? But he's been made to feel important again, signed a new contract. And the sense that things have, you know, not to say that things were perfectly balanced at Lyon, but in terms of the age of the players, I think it's very different. Whereas if you look at Spurs, there's been a sense for a while that that team is on the turn, and all of a sudden you've got to settle to a new league, new type of football, new set of expectations, very, very high expectations. And at the same time, you're learning as you go. I think that's quite difficult. And let's be honest, there are better players than Ndombele who've had an average first season in the Premier League.
Absolutely.
And I say that as someone who likes him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how Ndombele responds to the way Jose Mourinho criticised his performance at the weekend.
Instagram?
What, has he done that?
Instagram. No.
Oh, right, I was going to say.
Joking.
I thought he had done. I was like, have I missed something?
That's how I would respond if I was a 20-something footballer.
But it will be interesting to see what his next performance is like, because I'm intrigued, because as you were mentioning a minute ago, some players quite like tough love. Different people respond to criticism in a different way. Some people need an arm around them, and other people need a bit of tough love, and other people quite like actually a bit of a hammering. It might kind of push you to achieve more if someone gives you a bit of a hammering. Mm. And some people quite enjoy thriving under that pressure.
Well, he's had a lot of setbacks in his career. So the idea that he's going to say, oh, well, right, maybe it's not going to happen for me here, I find that ludicrous.
Yeah.
I find that a massive underrating of him as a character, him as a person, and him as a player.
I also think there's method to Jose Mourinho's madness, as I put in inverted commas, because he chose to respond the way he did, knowing full well that he would be talked about. Mm. He knew that this wasn't going to be something that just went under the radar. He talked about Oliver Skipp and he talked about Ndombele in the same sentence. And he said, both of them, I took them both off at halftime. They both weren't good enough, but I'm not going to blame it on Oliver Skipp. And he chose to say some fairly nice things about Skipp and chose to face all the negativity and put it all on Ndombele. So there must be a reason for that. There's no way that that was just something that came out of Jose's mouth. There's always a reason behind everything he says to the media, I think.
Yeah, and let's be honest, would you rather be Skipp or Ndombele in this situation? Because I'm sure he said nicer things about Skipp, but he's going to get a load less games in the next 2 months.
It's true.
Whereas Ndombele is going to get lent on and made to play well eventually.
Mm, yeah, definitely. As for Bruno Fernandes, he's had nothing but kind of plaudits, really. And everyone has just been singing his praises since his arrival at Manchester United.
It has given them some sort of momentum. I mean, you know, there's an argument that they're not quite in the box seat for fourth place yet, but they're picking up momentum at exactly the right time, aren't they? And it's going to be hard for Chelsea to hold them off. I mean,
although they were excellent against Everton, Chelsea.
Yeah, they were fantastic. And in the final analysis, I mean, fourth and fifth might be good enough for Champions League, depending on what happens with Manchester City's appeal at CAS.
Yeah, I think that Manchester United right now, if you're looking at, let's call it the original top six, so out of the ones that are outside the top four at the moment, if you look at United, Tottenham and Arsenal, of the three of them, for me, the most likely right now would be United to get into a Champions League spot. Time to get to your correspondence now. Loads of you have been in touch this week at Jules Breach on Twitter, at Andy Brassel, or of course you can email us both, Jules and Andy, at footballrambledaily.com. And we've got this one from Louis Harker from Leyland, who said, "Hey guys, love the show. Wanted to follow up on your conversations regarding racism over the last few weeks." He says, "I was appalled to see that Kiko Kasia was given an 8-game ban for racism. And around the same time, Daniel Sturridge was handed a ban until the end of the season for breaching gambling laws. Now, he's obviously done wrong, but is gambling on games that you have no part of a bigger issue than racially abusing another player?" He says, "Growing up as one of the only mixed race kids in my area, I've been subject to racial abuse most of my life and find it disgusting that somebody having a little flutter has been given a punishment until the end of the season, whereas Kasia on racism was only given an 8-match ban. Would love to hear your thoughts on the matter." First of all, Louis, thank you very much for emailing us, and really sorry to hear that you've been subject to racial abuse. And obviously, we hope that you're okay and that you can talk to people about it. And thank you for reaching out to us. What do you think, Andy, about these two different situations?
I don't think they're strictly comparable in a way. And I do agree as far as Kiko Kasia goes. I think he's got off quite lightly. I really do. And I think some of the things that he brought up to try and mitigate it were just nonsense. Yeah. Absolute nonsense.
Felt like he was trying to say something, but then the more he said, the worse it got.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was trying to make excuses that just made no sense.
Yeah, they didn't. And it's something, you know, you can't put up with at all. And on the whole, I think English football does deal with this a lot better than some of its overseas counterparts. I can understand, particularly in the current climate, why there would be a desire to make an example of him. And I think the way he tried to squirm out of it really did him no credit at all. And you have to ask, has he been poorly advised by the people around him? I mean, for once, it would just be nice for someone to say, "Okay, I did it. It was unacceptable. I'm taking these steps to deal with it." But I do tend to think that sometimes footballers just think of it in a term of, like any sort of wrongdoing, whether it be racism or anything else. How does it affect the team? And I can understand what that when they're locked into a team mentality, but it doesn't mean it's right. You've got to take some personal responsibility. You've got to forget about what it means for the team or your club. And, you know, the reason that the punishment's happening is because of him. Mm-hmm. It's not because of anyone else. So he has to accept the consequences of that. And I think there needs to be a wider discussion about this, though, because something that did disturb me a little as well, Jonathan Lecco, who was unfortunately the subject of that, coming out and saying that he didn't get the help that he wanted from Kick It Out.
It's really disappointing to hear that.
And Kick It Out have received a bit of stick from this, and Troy Townsend, a friend of the show who does tireless work, really, and has done tireless work with Kick It Out for years. I do find it disappointing that Kick It Out, and it's something that Troy explained to us on a previous Ramble Meets, are treated synonymously with the English football authorities. They're not the same thing. You know, they're an independently and not brilliantly funded pressure group who do a lot of selfless work and spend a lot of time trying to improve conditions for not just for black players, but for women, for LGBT players, and supporters. So I know Troy's quite hurt by this criticism. He's talked about it, and he says that's not the case. They're always available there to help him. So I think that's a bit of a pity. I think on both sides of this, there's such a lack of clarity.
Yeah.
And I'd really like to see not only players given support, but Kick It Out have the opportunity to show who they are and what they're about a little bit better. Obviously, their profile's raised to a certain extent, but still, I think they're often miscast for being part of the establishment, which isn't the case at all. They do loads of terrific work. As part of the Daniel Sturridge thing, I do see that as totally separate, and it's not him betting on games. I mean, we talked about this on the continent on Football Ramble Daily last week. It's him giving insider tips to friends and family, and he made out like he was naive. I don't think he was. And also, the burden of proof is always so tricky in cases like the Casilla case, because it's he said, he said, in a match environment, when there's the noise of the crowd, when all the subjects aren't static, when you've got all the players around and other stuff happening. Whereas this, there's a clear trail of what happened, so it's clear. So I don't think you can compare the two things to together. It is super difficult for the authorities to deal with these cases. I think it's a positive thing that Kiko Casilla has been punished, but on the other hand, do we need more clarity, more definition, more support, more training?
Yeah.
For players from different cultures as well. That's part of it. We need all of those things.
There needs to be more education, doesn't there?
It's a constant battle. It's a constant battle. But fortunately, we've got people like Troy and Kick It Out doing such a good job around it.
Definitely. Well, thank you for your email, Louis Harker. Hopefully that helps you out a little bit. And loads more of you have been in touch as well. There's quite a few European emails, Andy. So I think I might leave them to you to read for on the continent.
Can I put them in Marcus's mailbag?
I think you could put them in the mailbag. Although one of them that I really did like from Walid, who is written in about Turkish football.
Yes.
One of the things he
knows his way to my heart. Yeah.
One of the things he asked about is, he said, my old football team are going to be heading down to Seville for the final day of La Liga, where we hope to find tickets for Sevilla against Valencia. And he said, any tips on things to see, traditions relating to Sevilla home games, and particularly good places for quality tapas and or a beer would be more than welcome.
There are loads of great places directly around the stadium, the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. You've got to get loads of photos outside the front. As actually Marcus will tell you, it's incredible mosaic outside the front of the stadium. You've got to get a few selfies of yourself and your mates with that. It looks brilliant. There are lots of great places to eat and drink directly around the stadium. And also, depending how big you are, in the shopping centre right next to it at Nørrebjørn, you've got a sort of tube slide, like tunnel slide, that comes out the side of the shopping centre off the first floor and lands in the park at the bottom.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Well, I'd definitely fit in there. Do you fit in there?
Good. We'll give it a go next time we're over. I don't think I would. I'd clang my head on the way down.
All right. Well, I'm off to Leipzig. What are you doing for Champions League this week?
I'm going to be in studio for most of that, doing the Champions
League
radio show.
Safely tucked away in the studio.
Yeah, that's
I've already
had
one flight cancelled, Andy. I will not be stuck in Germany. My mission is to make it back within 2 days. I'm going to go to Leipzig and I'm going to hopefully be back in England by Wednesday.
Jules,
fingers crossed,
hitches back and makes it back just in time for next week's Jules and Andy.
Indeed. All right. Thank you all for listening. Keep getting in touch with us. Jules and Andy, footballrambledaily.com. And you can contact us both on Twitter as well. We'll see you next week.
See you later.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.